small village of Klosters in Switzerland is like another home to me. As many of you know, I was raised in Germany and England and spent a great deal of time in Switzerland. I'm what they call a third culture kid, with no particular national origin or home culture, because of having been raised in so many places. So we were in Switzerland every year for several months during the first 9 years of my life when we lived in Germany. And our pediatrician told my parents to take their children into the mountains regularly to help with bronchial issues. What a great prescription, right? So last week, I know many of you were wondering, where on earth did she go last week? Well, after a long time planning, my mother, brother, and I met there for a very rare family reunion, a trip down memory lane. We hadn't been back in over 30 years. And remarkably, very little had changed. I had no problem finding the spot where I'd broken my arm as a 9-year-old, skiing too fast over a protruding hill that seemed so appealing near the farmhouse that we rented. And I reminisced about milking cows as I walked down the old streets that had the oddly comforting smell of cow manure. And I remembered the delicious pastries and chocolate, not to mention the joy and freedom I felt as a child exploring the small sheltered village and the majestic mountains surrounding it. But lest you think it was all cowbells and Swiss chocolate smells and Heidi pigtails, family reunions and trips down memory lane can also trigger some more difficult memories, right? Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I'm around my family of origin, I go right back to being the young child struggling with family dynamics. Have any of you ever had that experience? Oh, good, I'm not alone. So barely a day into our vacation, I'd swiftly time traveled back to my childhood practice of feeling lacking and less than whole. Try as I might as a child, I never felt good enough. I wasn't thin enough, smart enough, tough enough, attractive enough, or polite enough. Despite being a high achiever and elected head girl of my school in England, and later being accepted to both Princeton and Stanford, I somehow internalized the message that no matter what I did, I was never going to be enough. Both German and English standards of achievement and perfection were exacting. It wasn't until I won the thesis prize at Princeton for my senior thesis on the development of music for the masses in 18th century Germany and Austria, and graduated magna cum laude, that my father ever visibly expressed pride in what I'd achieved. And unfortunately, the sense of not being good enough has dogged me much of my life, and it's led to my relentless, unconscious drive towards perfection. I can't really blame my parents, though. They'd both grown up in exacting German households, too, where everything had to be done just so in order to pass muster. Neither of them were probably ever valued or accepted, flaws and all, either. So as I remembered the disapproving looks and judgments that flew like arrows at me most days of my childhood, as an adult, I had to work hard to remind myself that who I am is enough. I may not be perfect in the Germanic sense of perfection, which means being exquisitely mannered, polite, punctual, well-dressed, learned, cultured and attractive, always saying and doing the right thing, and being in the right place at the right time. German perfection also requires having worldly success, overworking incredibly hard, which none of you have ever seen me do, and being able to show something important for your life. These high expectations, demands, and judgments seem to be just embedded in Germanic culture. In fact, being anything less than these supposed signs of outward perfection and success meant feeling like a terrible disappointment, a shame-filled embarrassment, which it felt hard to shake, a sense of never being lovable as a result of obvious inadequacies. So, might imagine, I've spent a lot of my adult life working on feeling not good enough. It's a struggle many of us share, I think, particularly women, accepting ourselves, foibles and all, forgiving ourselves for our mistakes and shortcomings, embracing our flaws as part of our wholeness rather than pretending they don't exist. Now, perfection gets you praise and acknowledgement, but it doesn't allow you to be a whole human being in whom flaws are welcomed. In fact, pretending we don't make mistakes or have any flaws can lead to depression and self-alienation. It can lead to us becoming hollow shadows of ourselves, to build shields that no one can penetrate, to hide the vulnerable, tender, bumbling side of ourselves. It's like wearing a straitjacket that doesn't allow us to breathe. Trying to hide our imperfections creates a sense of tense uptightness, and it stops us from being able to trust and open our hearts to others. It's a cold, lonely place, not unlike Superman's fortress of solitude in the Arctic. Yet none of us is or can be perfect, whatever perfect means. Of course, it's a relative term. A perfect German would never be considered perfect in Italy, let alone Israel. And even the Swiss were joking about the uptight Germans while we were there. And they're not exactly relaxed either. So none of us has the final say on the right way to do things at all times. Indeed, is there really such a thing as perfection? So what if we were to accept and even embrace our messiness, our less than perfect characteristics? What if we were to admit our own capacity for laziness, for greed, for pride, for selfishness, for gluttony, for meanness, for anger and envy as part of the complex puzzle of who we are? Perhaps these deadly sins are shadows, have use in our lives, as Jung and other psychotherapists suggest. What if we were to acknowledge these shadow sides of ourselves and offer them compassion rather than disdain? The great German and Swiss philosophers Nietzsche and Jung were ironically some of the first to explore integrating and owning our shadow. If we can't accept our flaws and imperfections, we can't allow others to have them either. In fact, we might get annoyed with others for exhibiting characteristics that we've disowned in ourselves. Disavowing parts of ourselves, rejecting aspects of who we are, leads naturally to getting triggered by others who have those characteristics. Whenever we condemn others for something, it would be wise to look honestly within our own hearts to find kernels of those traits within ourselves. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that we revel in the seven deadly sins and have no sense of conscience. No, no, no. That we let our shadow sides run rampant. But they're also part of what make us whole human beings. And they're in all of us, my friends. I have news for you. Even Mother Teresa, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, and even Jesus, as well as others we hold up as saintly. So if we were more willing to accept ourselves for all of who we are and recognize we're all a colorful tapestry of strengths and flaws, we might grow our compassion for one another and ourselves. We might learn to be more forgiving, more generous souls, and we might expand our hearts to be more loving and inclusive. Now, isn't that, after all, what we're all about as Unitarian Universalists? Isn't it? Isn't it who we strive to be? People who are embracing, forgiving, and welcoming? Our Universalist heritage calls us to follow God's example of being universally loving, forgiving, and inclusive. Yet I sometimes fear that as a faith, we can also uphold impossible standards of perfection. I mean, we expect ourselves to be perfect, justice-loving, industrious, smart, compassionate, open-minded, all-embracing, and inclusive, right? The consummate version of what our principles ask us to be. And those are difficult standards to uphold, my friends, and can create a certain arrogance and elitism that actually keeps people away. And these standards can generate a self-righteousness, an aloofness, that does the opposite of including all. Reverend Nancy MacDonald Ladd, in her recent UU World article entitled, "Nothing We Do Will Be Perfect," says, "Because we've been taught that we were meant to be perfect, our lack of perfection brings deep fragility both to our spiritual lives and our partnerships for justice." She asks us to acknowledge that we will never be perfect allies for justice. We will never get it all right. We will never be perfect, period. The theologian and philosopher Parker Palmer wrote, "Wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing brokenness as an integral part of life." My friends, unless we embrace our brokenness, the places where we are wounded, lazy, mean, or unkind, arrogant, weak, or depressed, parts of ourselves and where others will have power over us. And we'll really work hard to deny those parts of ourselves and thereby deny our wholeness. We'll attempt to hide parts of who we are so others don't see our flaws. We'll become defensive and reactive. But I have news for you. The emperor has no clothes. We can see you. You're not fooling anyone. Somewhere deep down, we all know that, right? We know that our shortcomings are visible anyway, no matter how much we try to cover them up with a veneer of perfection. And they will, in fact, become more potent because we spend our energy hiding and denying them rather than just accepting and working through them. And I warn you, if we try to squash them, they'll come out sideways in the form of addictions or mental health struggles. Unless we embrace those discarded and judged sides of ourselves, the ugly, sloppy parts, we'll be a hollow facsimile of who we were born to be. Unless we try to understand and have compassion for those shamed parts of ourselves, we'll remain removed, protected, and distant. And it's extremely difficult to share intimacy, vulnerability, and love with people who keep parts of themselves walled off. Intimacy requires vulnerability, and vulnerability requires admitting our flaws, fears, and failings. So what if we were to be bold, bold within our community here, and accept these disowned sides of ourselves that we so clearly see in others? Or at least be honest with ourselves that we can actually be thoughtless or unkind at times. Oh no, wait a minute, none of us has ever been unkind, right? or cruel, or envious, or arrogant, right? What about controlling, judgmental, or mean? No, no, not us Unitarians, of course not. We're all model citizens, right? My friends, until we can integrate, reintegrate the parts of ourselves that are not perfect, we secretly give power to the very things that we're trying to avoid. And if we don't, as Jung suggested, face and even embrace our shadow, we don't acknowledge a part of our existence. We need the contrasts to experience our wholeness. Just like we need the night to experience day, we need the dark to experience light. To truly experience love, we need to know the antipathy that also resides within us. Reflecting on this reminded me of the powerful poem by Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh entitled Call Me by My True Names. It's a long poem, so I encourage you to look it up after the service, but it's a shocking poem in which he talks about our complexity as humans, about the capacity within all of us to do the most awful things to one another, while also being the innocent victim. So he encourages us to be honest with ourselves about this duality, to own these hardened, cruel sides of ourselves. Because by owning these, he hopes that the door of our heart can be left open. The door of compassion. We are all of what we see in our news. We are the victim and the persecutor. We are the aggressor and the saint. We are the liberal and the conservative. We are the righteous and the guilty. We are the perfect and the imperfect. We're all of it. All of it, whether we own it publicly or not. When we can accept that about ourselves, then our hearts can truly open to the complex, flawed nature of humanity. When we can be honest with ourselves, then we will have a greater capacity to forgive. When we can face our contradictions, we get a deeper glimpse into the great divisions that are going on in our society right now. We gain a greater understanding and connection to our fellow human beings who may seem less foreign to us as a result. Our edges might soften, our hearts may open, and we'll perhaps be able to embrace our own and others' imperfections. We'll become whole. Parker Palmer, who's written a beautiful book called A Hidden Wholeness, said, if I am to let my life speak things I want to hear, I must also let it speak things I do not want to hear and would never tell anyone else. My life is not only about my strengths and virtues, he writes, it is also about my liabilities and my limits, my trespasses and my shadow, an inevitable, though often ignored, dimension of the quest for wholeness is that we must embrace what we dislike or find shameful about ourselves, as well as what we're confident and proud of. And I would add that having a sense of humor about our shortcomings gives them a gentle way to come out of the shadows. I had to find humor and self-acceptance during this family reunion when I wanted to lay in bed longer than expected, or I spilled a glass of water, or I had done something else imperfect, something in the wrong way. Loving and laughing along with the shameful, flawed, and disliked parts of ourselves allows us to truly honor the inherent worth and dignity of all human beings. And Jake, I'd love you to put that slide up now, please. So the next time that you're feeling lazy, bring to mind this adorable baby sloth. It will help you remember how adorable you are, even in the midst of your sin. And in fact, you'll see in the bottom of the picture, well, maybe not on, yeah, it's just right down here. It says the Church of Sloths down here. I dare us to experiment. You can take it down now, thank you. Enough slothfulness, right? A colleague and dear friend of mine, Reverend Linda Susan Ulrich, tells a story of how she reintegrated a part of herself she felt shame around. Out of the blue, she writes, the 5-year-old turned to me and said matter-of-factly, "You're fat." In the brief space between his statement and my reply, I remembered everything I'd endured around my weight, she writes. This little boy's words touched old, tender wounds. But this time I took a breath and decided to try something different. "That's right," I said. "I am fat. Just like your dad is tall, and you're short, and your mom has red hair. Isn't it cool how bodies come in all sorts of shapes and sizes?" By reclaiming the word fat as an adjective rather than an accusation, I didn't just teach a kindergartner about the beautiful variations among human bodies. I reminded myself that our tender places are a source of strength, and that the tigers are no longer in the grass. Spirit of compassion, she writes, help us draw strength from all that we are. Give us new language with which to claim our wholeness, a new litany of joy built out of the words that wounded. My friends, I invite us to grow our compassion for the shamed and disowned parts of ourselves, to accept our perfectly imperfect natures. I invite us to tenderly nourish those wounded places where we may not feel good enough and where we hide for fear of losing love. May we forgive ourselves and each other for our broken, sloppy, and less than perfect selves, and perhaps even learn to laugh about our human failings as tender places of strength. This is important work because as we develop the courage to reclaim and acknowledge the rejected parts of ourselves, we cultivate compassion and understanding which can help heal our world. As we accept ourselves for all of who we are, we realize we are holy in our brokenness. Indeed, we are whole. As we each love each other, forgiving one another's shortcomings, we learn what it truly means to be a universalist, what it means to be perfectly imperfect, a wholly lovable human being. May it be so.